to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, and it is my extreme pleasure to say we are joined by a man I've come to admire greatly for his work in the national security arena, both in government and out. He is Dr. Daniel Gouret. Today, he is a vice president of the Lexington Institute, but in the past, he served in a number of capacities, including as the director of the Office of Strategic Competitiveness in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. Dan is the author of a new product at the Lexington Institute entitled The Southwest Defense Complex, America's Military Crown Jewel. You can check it out at lexingtoninstitute.org, and I hope you will. In the meantime, welcome, Dan. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Thank you, Frank. Always good to be with you.
Let me ask you about a topic that you're deeply knowledgeable about and have been writing with considerable effect on of late, and that is, what's up with Russia? We talked in an earlier segment with Diana West a little bit about Vladimir Putin's machinations, it seems, to mess around with an old Soviet dissident by the name of Vladimir Bukovsky, but that's hardly the least of it. Give us a sense of sort of what Putin's doing with respect to his military capabilities, including, it seems, threatening their use.
That's right, Frank. What we are seeing now is a major, sustained, and largely successful military modernization and buildup by the Russian government, past the Russian government, across the board. We are talking about investments in a range of nuclear forces, including a new massive liquid-fueled ICBM called the Sarmat to replace the old SS-18 Satan, supposedly only carrying 10 warheads. It's got enough throw weight to carry double that amount. New nuclear submarines with a new missile on that. New theater nuclear weapons, most of them dual-capable. So if those are launched, we won't know until the ban goes off whether there's a nuclear weapon on the front of it or just a conventional weapon. Then there is a wholesale redo of the conventional forces. We've seen their ability to now deploy all the way to Syria and operate jointly, that is the air, sea, and land forces together. And then a whole host of what are called hybrid capabilities, that is using the secret police, using cyber warfare to undermine nations around their periphery, steal their data, bribe their officials, and all the rest. This is, if you will, not quite total war, but war against the West, against the world on multiple fronts.
War of the Cold War kind, at the very least, at the moment. And what I guess people say is, there you go again, Dan Gouret. You're an old cold warrior. You're just seeing ghosts from the past. And yet, this is all the more extraordinary, Dan. I think there's no disputing what you've just said, that it's taking place against the backdrop of a country whose economy is absolutely in tatters. How is Putin doing this, and at what cost?
You know, if it was just pointing at things the Russians are doing with the military, one might say, yeah, exactly right, he's just a cold warrior. But they have made it clear, Putin in speeches, their national security doctrine, that their primary threat is the United States and NATO. It is the West, which is incapable of militarily threatening Russia. Let's be honest about this. What's going on for Putin now is, the economy is in tatters. His demographics are lousy. You know, the population is going to decline, the number of healthy males, all that kind of stuff. Nobody's investing in Russia. The oil market is bad. He's only got one string to the fiddle, if you will, and that is nationalism and the related one of military power. And if he's going to stay in power, which he clearly is, that's the string that he is going to fiddle on for the foreseeable future. There's nothing else he can do. And that's the really dangerous part.
You know, in reading some of your recent writings, Daniel Gouret, I was struck by something that you described kind of in a net assessment context, how all of this is comparing to the capabilities of the West. And as you say, I mean, we're in no shape, let alone of a mind, to actually threaten Russia. But the development and deployment of an increasingly capable integrated air defense system that has the capacity to shoot down aircraft over parts of Germany, let alone Poland and the Baltic states and other nations that we're treating as NATO allies these days, is really quite stunning. And it called to mind something that Lieutenant General David Deptula recently wrote, a now retired three-star in the Air Force, about how we've become accustomed to air superiority to a point where most of our pilots will be hard-pressed to operate under very different circumstances. And what you've just described there is likely to be a very different circumstance indeed, isn't it?
There is no question. These air defenses we're talking about, and by the way, they apply to other countries that are, if you will, aligned with Russia or that Russia has helped out, such as Syria. The only way you're going to be able to deal with these air defenses is a massive campaign. So essentially, it's a war, full-blown war. That's one of the reasons that the president was dissuaded from taking action against Syria, because the air defenses were so great, you could not do a surgical strike. You actually had to go and roll back the air defenses. Well, what we're talking about in Eastern Europe, in Kaliningrad, in the Western military districts, are air defenses that are even better. They are layered. They are modern. And they literally can deny us the ability not just to go over, if you will, Russian territory and operate, but even operate in vast swaths of NATO territory and international waters, the Baltic, the Black Sea, even parts of the North Sea around where Norway and Svalbard are.
And Dan, when you see, speaking of those waters, Russian fighter pilots doing barrel rolls over aircraft and buzzing ships operating in international waters, what, again, does that suggest is afoot here? Are these just simple harassments, or is there something worse going on?
No, what's really going on here is this is an attempt to challenge the U.S., NATO, other countries, so that in fear of an incident, we will simply stop operating in those airspaces. The Chinese tried the same thing. You remember way back in the Bush administration, Bush for three, with the hitting the EP-3 that landed on Hainan Island. The issue here is to try and force us out of those airspaces so that our countries, our allies, ourselves, basically say, oh, we are too afraid of an incident because these people are acting crazy, that we will stop asserting our rights. Stop operating in international waters, international airspace, stop using those places for intelligence collection, and essentially feed them in a de jure fashion to Russia.
Let me ask you about one piece of this. The response of the United States government, including some of the military, to all of this has been to sort of downplay it, to just describe this kind of conduct as unprofessional behavior. That seems to fit a larger pattern with a few exceptions, and you've written about several, the Deputy Secretary of Defense, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, among them. But there does seem to be a concerted effort being made by the United States government to suggest that there's nothing to see here, folks. Move along. Is that fair?
Oh, absolutely. And it is primarily coming from the White House. I mean, I will tell you that when I've talked to senior people, including some within the NSC, they're running around with their hair on fire. The absolute fear of Russia, the recognition that we, in fact, have got an adversary on our hands, not because of what we did, in some sense, because of what we were doing, but that he has us squarely in his sights. And any attempt to sort of downplay this or make it seem like, you know, statements of using nuclear weapons against Western countries is simply for domestic consumption is nonsense. These people are laying out essentially their national security strategy, their defense strategy, their military strategy. It's offensively oriented and it's focused on us.
We are on notice. We ignore it at our extreme peril. And I can tell you how appreciative I am, Dan Garay, for the work that you're doing to try to make sure that we don't do that at the Lexington Institute and through your various media platforms, including this one from time to time. I hope you'll come back to us again very soon, and that the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Afting. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.